Joe Cox, a British Member of Parliament, has died after being shot and stabbed in her constituency in Northern England on Thursday. The 41-year-old Labour Party lawmaker was attacked as she prepared for a meeting with constituents in Birstall near Leeds. West Yorkshire police say a 52-year-old man had been arrested by armed police but have not released further details regarding the attack.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09 and it is Friday. It's June 17th, 2016. Welcome to another business day and welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. We made it through a really tough, busy week here, and it's going to be a well-deserved weekend, especially for all of you dads out there. But we have a lot to talk about this morning. Let's get right to the WGN market desk for a look at what's happening around the world on global stock markets. You heard Vic mention some of the trends this morning, but here are some of the numbers behind that. First, in Asia this morning, finally, some up arrows. All of the arrows pointing in the green up direction. The Nikkei has gained about 1% back, but over the week, it has lost quite a bit of its volume. Yesterday, almost 4%. The Hang Seng Shanghai also higher today by about 0.5% each. In Europe, the markets are higher as well after a rough overnight and day yesterday. All of the indices are up more than 1%, including the FTSE, which is up almost 3% this morning. In Germany, the DAX is up 1.5%. There appears to be a little bit more stability that has reached those markets after the past few days, perhaps even there's a sell-off after some of the cheapness of stocks and other issues over the last few days. As you know, Europe is really nervous about the upcoming Brexit vote that's coming up next week. The UK set to vote whether or not to leave the European Union, and that vote is scheduled for the 23rd of June. Connected to that Brexit, you heard there at the beginning of the show the announcement of the death of one of the lawmakers in the UK, Joe Cox, who was shot and stabbed on a street in northern England shortly after a meeting with constituents. She was one of the people, one of the lawmakers in Great Britain, who stood against the departure of Britain from the European Union with an upcoming referendum that we've been calling Brexit. You've been hearing us talk about that. All of the campaign activity on that matter has been temporarily halted. This is a very rare attack for the UK. It is not often. It's very rare that we see somebody shot and killed, let alone a lawmaker killed in some violent attack like this. ABC News chief correspondent Terry Moran is in London. He's been reporting on this. He says the assailant, taken down by police within minutes of the attack, is a 52-year-old man.
Joe Cox was married and the mother of two young children. Her husband, Brendan, issuing a statement saying she would have wanted two things above all else. One, that our precious children are bathed in love. And two, that we all unite to fight against the hatred that killed her.
Again, the Brexit campaigning, all of it has been suspended for now as the UK mourns this lawmaker there. Also today, Asian stock markets are bouncing back. We see consumer prices in the United States rising by a moderate amount in May, driven up by rising energy costs and the biggest increase in shelter and housing costs in more than 9 years. The Commerce Department reported yesterday that consumer prices jumped about 0.2%. following a 0.4% report in April. The data was a slight relief to investors as the report was released after the Federal Reserve said it was concerned about low inflation. Also coming up today here on the business desk, the Commerce Department will report on U.S. home construction in May. Also, the Labor Department will report on the state of unemployment rates for May. Also today in big news, Philadelphia is the first major city in America to issue a soda tax despite what has been a multi-million dollar campaign against it by organizations, including some of the soda companies who spent quite a bit of money on this to try to get this not to happen. But it apparently did, and Philadelphia is one of the first countries now in the United States that has this soda tax. Obviously, the point of it is to combat the growing epidemic of obesity there. The American Medical Association has been meeting in Chicago over the past week, and they have wrapped up their meeting. They've elected a new president. They've also come out with a list of priorities for the coming year. Among those that will be tackled, gun violence, also the opioid epidemic and measures that doctors can take. We'll talk with the new president of that organization who spoke to the House of Delegates after his election.
Being a physician is so empowering and uplifting. How can you not love this work? That is why it's troubling to hear about so many accomplished and brilliant doctors who are leaving our profession. It is disheartening to hear about physicians' stories of being burned out, of feeling unsupported by administrators, dogged by unnecessary regulations, stressed by the pace of their jobs, and mired in mountains of paperwork.
That's Dr. Andrew Gurman. He's an orthopedic hand surgeon from Hollisburg, Pennsylvania, now the president of the American Medical Association, the 171st president of the AMA. And Dr. Gurman joins us this morning here on The Opening Bell. Dr. Gurman, first of all, congratulations on your election. Thank you for joining us this morning on The Opening Bell. What would you say are the top priorities of your organization as you move forward?
I think that one of the biggest problems facing the profession today is physician burnout and physician dissatisfaction. And in fact, one of the three strategic pillars of the AMA is practice sustainability and physician satisfaction. We are seeing burnout rates that have increased 10 percentage points in a number of specialties in the years between 2011 and 2014, which are the last years for which we have data. In certain specialties, urology, family practice, rehabilitation medicine, burnout rates of 63%, radiology 61%, orthopedic surgery, my specialty, 59%. These are huge numbers. Some physicians, brilliant doctors, great clinicians are leaving the profession because they are just burned out and dissatisfied. So we have to find ways to make this better, and that's one of the things that the AMA is engaging in. We clearly know that satisfied and happy physicians have happier patients and deliver better quality of care.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. The stock market spent Thursday in retreat until a late session rally pushed the major indexes higher. The Dow Jones ended up 93 points. The Nasdaq closed up 10. The S&P 500 was ahead 6 at the closing bell. U.S. consumer prices rose moderately in May, driven up by rising energy costs and the biggest increase in housing costs in more than 9 years. The data was a slight relief to investors after the Federal Reserve said it was still concerned about low inflation. By a 96% majority, casino workers in Atlantic City have voted to strike on July 1st unless a new contract is reached. It comes at a crucial time for the city as it grapples with a $100 million budget gap and the loss of four of its 12 casinos in 2014. It's final. Philadelphia is the first major American city with a soda tax, despite a multi-million dollar campaign by the beverage industry to stop it. City Council gave its final approval to a 1.5 cent per ounce tax on sugary and diet beverages. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
There are profound changes happening in medicine right now, and as leaders of our profession, we must respond. And that response must be twofold, adapting to change and advocating for our profession. I firmly believe that all physicians need to participate in advocacy as a professional responsibility, just like we participate in lifelong learning. I plan to spend the coming year bringing that message to as many physicians and medical students as I can.
Dr. Andrew Gurman, the head of the American Medical Association, the new 171st president of the AMA, with us this morning on The Opening Bell. That's part of his acceptance speech, his inaugural speech at their meeting here in Chicago that has just wrapped up. Dr. Gurman, what are the things that you're going to focus on? I know that gun violence is going to be at the top of that, and also drug abuse. How big is the gun violence issue?
So the two issues that we dealt with at our convention this past week were increasing the necessity for background checks to expand to all firearm purchases, not just handguns, which was the previous policy. And the other policy which we passed was to call for an end of the ban on funding of research on the public health effects of gun violence. Look, 30,000 people a year in this country die of gun violence or gun-related violence. Now, just to contextualize that, somewhere between 30,000 and 40,000 people each year die of opioid overdose, During the height of the AIDS epidemic, around 40,000 people a year were dying of AIDS. So in response to HIV/AIDS and in response to opioids, we studied every aspect that we could think of to try to find a way to address the public health problem in a scientific way. And yet, in response to a similar number of deaths from gun violence, we simply bury our head in the sand and say, we will not allow funding of any research. We will not allow any questions. We will not allow any consideration of the public health effects of this. Let me stress clearly so that there is no misunderstanding. This is not a discussion about gun ownership. This is not a discussion about Second Amendment rights. This is a discussion about a public health problem and our governmental unwillingness to even allow investigation of the problem from a public health perspective. It's irresponsible and it's nuts.
And the response to the opioid epidemic has been swift across the country. Even Walgreens is now selling the antidote to that.
Well, in response to the growing number of opioid deaths, we studied it. We talked about it. The AMA convened a task force that has 23 members, including a number of medical specialties. The dentists are at the table. There have been interagency discussions between the AMA and other medical groups and government. We have an excellent working relationship with Michael Botticelli, who is the head of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. He doesn't like the term drug czar, but that's the term that's sometimes used. But Director Botticelli and I have met on several occasions. He's met with Patrice Harris, who is our current board chair and is also chair of this task force. And on a staff level, we are having very enriched and fruitful discussions trying to address this. The task force has come out with recommendations, including the availability of naloxone, which is one of the things that you mentioned. So the contrast between the approach to that public health problem and the approach to the public health problem of gun violence is striking.
After the Orlando shooting, there seems to be a crack in the armor in terms of debating what to do next. Do you think we finally reached the point where there something is going to be done by the Congress?
Again, I want to limit the comments from the AMA perspective to consideration of the public health problem. That requires research, and that requires a congressional willingness to fund that research. The discussions about gun ownership, gun control, Second Amendment rights, those are political decisions. Those are decisions that need to be made by the people of America through their elected representatives. And that's not a public health issue to which the AMA will be a party of the discussion.
In your first blog report to your members, you told them or asked them, you said, if they're on the sidelines, to get involved. What did you mean by that?
One of my personal passions or goals for my presidency is to have every physician understand and accept that advocacy is a professional responsibility, just like lifelong learning, just like staying current, and that's advocacy. It's easy to sit on the sidelines and complain. If the AMA isn't doing something that a particular physician wants, or if they don't think we're doing it right, that was an open invitation for everybody to join us in the discussion. The AMA House of Delegates is made up of 192 different components. These are geographic societies and specialty societies. So every physician who practices in this country has access to making the policy through their various organizations, even if they're not AMA members. I think that the people who choose to be members of the AMA are those who choose to be leaders among leaders and engage in a very meaningful way in the process. So my invitation is for everybody to get involved. I am represented in our House of Delegates by six different entities. Most physicians are represented by at least two. In my case, it's the Pennsylvania Medical Society, American College of Surgeons, American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, the American Orthopedic Association, and there's an American Society for Surgery of the Hand, as well as an American Association for Hand Surgery. We jokingly call them the Right Hand Society and the Left Hand Society.
You're taking over at a time when there's big changes coming with the future of medicine, telemedicine, that sort of thing. Are you optimistic about the future of medicine and being a doctor?
Oh, absolutely. I am optimistic about it for old reasons and for new reasons. Old reasons go back to when the first physicians were taking care of gladiators probably even further back than that. One of the most intimate things that a person can do is to come to you and say, take care of me. It is a tremendous honor and a tremendous privilege to be able to meet people in that way and to become a part of their lives and to get the satisfaction of making them better. It's what I love about medicine and it's what I love about hand surgery. So those are the old reasons. The new reasons are that we are on the cusp of such incredible breakthroughs. I mean, think about it. We understand disease at a molecular level in a way that we never did before. We can tailor therapies in cancer and in other diseases. We can tailor to individual molecules, to individual genetic differences. This is phenomenal. And our access to information through a smartphone, is incredible. When I was a medical student, if I wanted to know something, I had to go to the library and look it up. Now on Google, I can find the same information or some other databases. I can find the same information in, 30 seconds. It's incredible.
There's been a lot of discussion about whether robots are going to take people's jobs. Are robots going to take doctors' jobs at some point?
I don't think so. I'm really interested to see what Watson is going to do and to be able to run algorithms to answer certain clinical questions. And certainly in the fields of surgery, robotics, meaning robots that are guided by a person, by a surgeon, but make certain kinds of surgery more easy, that certainly is advancing tremendously. But I don't see in the near future being put out to pasture by a robot or a computer.
Dr. Andrew Gurman, the 171st president of the American Medical Association, which has just wrapped up its annual meeting here in Chicago.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:39. Want to get away for the weekend, looking for a cheap fare, want to find out where the TSA lines are the shortest. It is Friday. Let's bring in our airline expert on this. It's Rick Cini, the CEO and founder of FareCompare.com, with us from Dallas this morning. Rick, good morning. First, let's talk about how things are going with fares. I understand there's also a new survey that flyers are actually a little bit more happier than they were at the start of the year with airlines.
Well, I think there's a couple things. There's certainly Mother Nature helps in some cases. A lot of complaints tend to be about on-time departures, arrivals, mishandled bags, and whatnot. The other is the airlines have made a huge windfall profits the last couple of years, and they've been throwing some of that money at a charm offensive, and hopefully that's catching on. So the good news is that they've actually dropped month over month by 20% on the complaints. Not that easy to complain, by the way, the Department of Transportation. If you type that into Google, it's on page 2 where you actually have to complain. So you have to be motivated to complain. I think the other thing that's helping too is the on-time arrival stats have gotten better. Low 80s in the previous month, and then last month it's jumped up to the mid 80s, so 3% better. There's some winners and losers, of course, in that. Hawaiian Airlines being the best for obvious reasons with the great weather out there. Delta and Alaska, a bit of surprise with Delta there, one of the huge airlines. And then the worst on-time arrivals, Spirit, Virgin America, and JetBlue.
And Spirit was the worst last year, so they seem to be continuing that trend, don't they?
Yeah, it's one of their problems is that they don't fly as many and they only have a couple departures each week. They tend to have some delays with that. Anytime there's a mechanical issue, they miss connections and a variety of other things. So it's sometimes being a big airline helps in those cases. At least it helps people get back home when they do miss a flight.
You know, and a lot of people are complaining about the TSA to the TSA. Do you think that's taking a little bit of the heat off the airlines?
Yeah, well, I'm surprised because usually the airlines catch some of that flack as well. But these numbers numbers are for April, so we won't know May until a while, and that's when we saw those huge lines in Chicago. So I got a feeling they're going to jump back up for the month of May.
The other thing is, too, you know, terrorism is back in the headlines. We're all thinking about Orlando. Orlando's a big place for people to visit. Is this impacting travel at all yet?
Yeah, we haven't seen prices change that much. We did actually look at prices compared to the last couple days for flights into Orlando. No real big change there in the price point. It was actually fairly cheap to go into Orlando across the country anyway. So we haven't seen that much change over the last couple days. So not much there. I doubt that that's going to change a whole lot. A lot of people have actually purchased their tickets to Disney and a variety of other places in the area and cruises. So most people are consuming right now, not buying.
Good deals out of Chicago?
Oh, I mean, I was looking at the end of July. You have sort of in the Northwest, you have Seattle and Portland, 270 round trip. Same time last year, 390. You also have places like Washington, D.C., New York, Boston, all 160 round trip. Last year, about 240 round trip. So really good deals right now for the end of July. So just be sure, if you can, at least on half your trip, leave on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Saturday. Those are the cheapest days to fly.
Well, as the guru in all of this, I mean, are there secrets to finding some low fares on a regular basis, or do you just have to, you know, be lucky?
Yeah, no, you don't have to be lucky. Now, if you sign up for deals alerts on ours out of Chicago, it'll actually send you deals once a week on different places that we found deals. If you sign up for alerts on a particular route, it'll tell you the days that you want to go, plus any other alternate days. It's really about picking and having some flexibility on the days of the week you go. A lot of these cheap prices, like Southwest just came out with a sale for the middle of this week, a $49 sale, but it only for travel for Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Saturdays. So if you're traveling on Monday, Friday, and Sunday, you don't get to participate on the sale. Now, I will note that if you do it at least half your trip on one of those days, you'll actually save some money. So you have to be pretty proactive. Sign up for things like on our site at faircompare.com, and you will find a deal if you have some flexibility on both on destination and day of the week.
So how has the TSA been doing over the past week, Rick?
Yeah, no, you could see that they have mustered up a huge, especially in Chicago, which was one of the key cities that made the national news for several weeks there. They've done a much better job, a grade of a B. Now we're heading right into the busy summer season. We're going to see some longer lines. So if you have international trips, be sure to get there 3 hours early, domestic 2 hours. It's still hit or miss, depending on what time of day. Now they say they're going to be posting some of the lines and wait times like they do on the Disney boards on their websites. We'll see if TSA can get that up quick enough. But when you wake up in the morning, it's all about sort of checking all those good resources. Make sure you have flight alerts as well. Don't head out to the airport if your flight's going to be delayed or canceled.
So I know you saw this. United Airlines has said it's going to go more after business flyers, and they've unveiled this new program with that. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so I mean, in general, you have all the major airlines competing for business travel. Now, those are the three legacy airlines, and Southwest control 80% of traffic. These folks are really coveted. They're the ones that spend the most. Their boss is usually buying their tickets. They're going to allow you to have all sorts of perks and upgrades. They're changing the loyalty program slightly. American actually changed theirs as well. There is a huge battle right now for the business customer, because at the moment, the $1,000 person is now the $900 person, and that's hurting some of the airlines' huge windfall profits that they had last year. So as a frequent flyer and elite traveler on United and going after business customers, they're also going to go after both American and Delta's customers as well, automatically allowing you to switch your loyalty status, giving you instant status in the United program. So a lot of great things happening there.
And then American is upgrading its in-flight to internet, apparently.
Yeah, you've also got a satellite-based system coming in. There's a huge, as you might imagine, bandwidth is important thing for business travelers, and the ones that have big presence in cities like Chicago, Los Angeles, and New York, I've hopped on planes where you basically can barely get email, and the airlines like Virgin America, where they have much higher bandwidth, people actually, business travelers do come on to those flights. So look, we're going to see that happen with Southwest as well shortly as well. They all want to have as much bandwidth as they can get up in the air.
All right, Rick. Thanks. Rick Cini from Dallas with us this morning, the founder and CEO of faircompare.com. You can find him at Rick Cini on Twitter, at faircompare.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. It is 5:50 on the WGN Market Desk this morning. Dow futures now pointing downward, off about 21 points. S&P and NASDAQ futures have also turned negative just within the last hour or so since we gave you an update at the top of the hour there. The Wall Street Open expected to be a little lower this morning. Lots of things probably at play there. But let's find out first what's happening with commodities and ag news this morning. Orion Samuelson is with us. Orion, this ag breakfast, I'm this close to doing it because it just sounds so delicious.
Well, I tell you what, young man, you just have pencil and paper ready, and I'll give you the exact address so you can put it into your GPS, and you'll have a thrill ride out I-90, and where I get off I-90 on Highway 47 and turn north every day, you'll turn south on 47, and you'll be there before you know it. They'll actually be starting, 24 hours from now. And it's not the only one. We have a lot of June Dairy Month breakfasts, particularly in Wisconsin. That's where they started. And America's Dairyland still ranks number one in Dairy Month breakfasts on the farm. I think they have something like 40 or 45 throughout the entire month. But the one tomorrow, yeah, we'll be there at about 8 o'clock tomorrow. And Steve and Johnny are joining us, and Steve Alexander and Diane joining us because they are the publishers of Steve and Johnny's book on Les Paul, and they are the publishers of my book, You Can't Dream Big Enough, and the dairy people, the dairy farmers of DeKalb and Kane counties have invited us to come out and visit with people. So we'll be there from about 8 till 10:30. But the hours for the dairy farm breakfast are 6 to 11 a.m. And if you want to see cows being milked in the milking parlor, you be there between 6 and 9 a.m. But that's not all you'll see. You'll be able to go into the barns and see the young dairy calves and the heifers and the cows. You'll be able to see the careful work that goes into putting rations together to see that the cows get proper nutrients. And then you'll be able to take your youngsters and let them sit in the seat of a four-wheel drive tractor and get to see all of the other equipment that goes into a modern farm today to produce the feed for the animals on a dairy farm. A donation of $8 for adults, $5 for children 5 to 10 years old, and children 4 and under are free. But here's the menu, Steve, if you want to start thinking about the food seriously. Okay. They will be serving breakfast with pancakes, sausage, applesauce, cheese, milk, coffee. And you probably haven't had ice cream too often for breakfast, but you will tomorrow from 6 to 11 a.m.
And so, I bet you there's nothing like ice cream on a real dairy farm.
Oh, absolutely. Oh. Yeah. It's they had the, I think this is probably the third time the Drendel family has opened up the farm for June Dairy Month. And so we've been there before. It's a great dairy family dairy farm operation, and a lot different than the dairy farm in Wisconsin that was my home growing up. It's a very modern dairy farm, and you'll see the care the animals get. You know, there are those few people who love to say that farmers and ranchers treat animals terribly, and why would they do that? Because the animals are their livelihood, and so you have to take care of them. Interesting thing happened this week with Cuba. When I visited Cuba and we did the morning show with Bob Collins back in the late 90s, we weren't doing much in the way of trade with them, but then we loosened some of the regulations. They were still not able to use credit to buy, but they have been doing some buying. But this week, for the first time in more than 5 years, the people in Cuba purchased U.S. soybean oil. And that's because South America has had the trouble they've had with the Argentine crop of soybeans because of the heavy rains back in April. So we sold 7,600 tons of soy oil to the Caribbean island in the first week of June. And while the shipment made up a small portion of U.S. exports, it was the biggest one to Cuba since 2010 and the first since 2011. And one trader noted the refined oil could be used for cooking. So as we wind up the week in trade, it's going to be interesting to watch. Rich Feltus, who is with R.J. O'Brien. I've known Rich for a long time. He's one of the best analysts in the grain market. And finally, after the up and downs of the weather changes in June and the reaction on the trading floor, he put it all in perspective. Rich Feltus said it is very difficult to stress crops during the vegetative stage. Now, if this weather had occurred in July or August, could be a different story. But he said, commenting on yesterday, the fact we are unable to hold prices today after the sell-off, another week of really strong export sales in both corn and soybeans, that confirms we are trading weather at the moment, and the weather is looking less threatening. And as I look at the overnight grain trade at the Chicago Board of Trade right now, we are looking at a higher grain market once again. Soybeans particularly are trading up 10.5 cents a bushel this morning. Oh, and I did promise you the address.
Number. Yeah, the address.
Here's the address. It is 15N057. That's 15N057 Walker Road. Walker Road in Hampshire, Illinois. And it is known as the Lindale Dairy Farm. So it's the Drendel family that's doing it. And Lindale Holstein Farm. So have you got it all, Steve?
Yeah, I got it all. And hopefully everybody else has it all. Head out there tomorrow for the big breakfast.
We'll be on the air tomorrow morning between 5 and 6, and then we'll be heading for the farm.
All right. Orion, thank you very much. Have a good weekend.
You too.